Going Linux, Episode 32, Computer America, Appearance Number 2. Welcome to the Going Linux Podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done.
If you're new to Linux, if you're moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this is the podcast for you. In our user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic.
During our first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts to the operating system. During month two, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for users of Linux building their competence and confidence with the operating system.
And between user experience episodes, we have listener feedback episodes.
This episode is my second appearance on the Computer America show on May 20th, 2008.
Nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. It's Tuesday, the 20th of May, 2008, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And, boy, you got a noisy fan in your room tonight. I can hear it.
I do. I'm actually, it's a customer system. It's got 24 more seconds before it's done, and I'm going to shut it down.
Ah, yes. Anyway, welcome to the Computer America show on this windy Tuesday evening.
I can it see is Kerry. Actually kind of windy outside.
I can see you in your office with the fan blowing your hair, you know, like from that guy listening to the tape? What was it? The Memorex day. Yeah, exactly. Sitting in front of the computer, though, and having the fan blow your hair back like that.
That would be pure heaven.
So the air would be a little warm, though, coming off of a PC. Anyway, we have a terrific show scheduled for you because if you're interested in Linux, this is the show you want to tune into. Usually we dedicate one 2-hour program a month to the topic of Linux, and certainly this month is no exception. We have different Linux experts appear on the show from time to time, that's what we're going to do tonight. Of course, we've got our CompUSA contest is in full swing. As well, lots of good things happening here at the Computer America show, and hopefully all of you all are participating in that as well. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little later in the show. I know this is your first night back from the weekend. Did you see anything good? Any good movies?
There aren't any good ones out.
Yeah, I know. After Speed Racer, that's it. Well, what's going on?
Indiana Jones is coming out to hit the IMAX.
Yeah,
Thursday. Indiana Jones will be Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah, you're gonna wait till you're gonna see. You can't see Thursday. You're on the air, so you're gonna have to catch it Saturday, right?
Yeah. I'll probably catch it Sunday. The crowds are too much on Saturday.
I would think so. Sunday, a good matinee or something. You know, that's probably the best way to catch it. Yeah.
Well, that's too early for me, but yeah, that is probably the best time. I have a buddy of mine who likes to do that. He goes to the first show on Sunday.
I have a friend who I invited him to go see the movie with me. I couldn't believe it. He has not seen one of the Indiana Jones movies. I can't believe this. I said, what planet are you on? How could you have not seen these movies? You know, but there you go. So he won't go see this one because I told him before he can see this one, he needs to watch the other three first.
You know, they do stand on their own pretty well, though.
Yeah, but still.
I don't know that you really need to understand anything from any of the previous movies to get.
Well, I have a feeling there'll be some little references that they do from the previous movies.
Yeah, but they're unimportant to the plot and the story.
Well, that's true, still. I told him you should see the first three and then see this one. But anyway, as I mentioned, it is a Linux show.
Glad you didn't take him to a James Bond movie. You got to watch these 21 and then you can go see number 22.
Actually, he saw the new Casino Royale with Daniel Craig as the new James Bond, and he of course that starts you right at the beginning because he just gets his 00 status, so you know
that's true. But you wouldn't know that if you didn't see the other ones.
This is true.
What they were. Yeah,
this
see.
Is true. Yeah, I like that.
It doesn't really take anything away from the plot.
Oh yeah, no, that's you're absolutely correct. All right. Well, as I mentioned, the Linux operating system continues to become more and more popular. aren't those 20 seconds over yet? Especially in the wake of
I have to reach over.
Well, go ahead and reach over while I'm announcing this. Especially in the wake of Microsoft's latest Windows iteration, Vista. Yes. So is Linux right for you? Well, today we're devoting the entire show, as I said, to Linux. Larry Bushy is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. So if you have any interest at all in Linux, make sure that you listen to both hours of tonight's show. And even if you haven't considered Linux before, well, maybe after tonight you might just change your mind and give it a try. Larry, welcome back into Computer America.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So the month rushed by since you were on last time, huh?
You bet.
So how are things going at the Going Linux podcast?
We're just motoring along. We've got a new episode coming out any day on backing up your computer, the advanced episode, and taking listener questions and emails in preparation for our listener feedback.
All right, so let me kind of lead off with this question, because most people know somewhere in the regions of their mind, it might be in the forefront of them, but when you say Linux, it's not really the big question mark, huh? Most people have heard of it. They know it's an alternative operating system. They know it's out there. So I'm going to ask you, why do you think Linux has still not penetrated the home user market with any significance, or has it?
Well, it really hasn't. It's beginning to do that more now that Windows Vista has gotten a lot of popularity for being not so user-friendly and not so hardware-friendly as well. You need to upgrade your hardware if you want to upgrade to Windows Vista. So in response to that, I think a lot of folks have been looking at alternatives, including Mac, but also including Linux. And a lot of people who dismissed it a long time ago are coming back and saying to themselves, what's new? What's changed since the last time I looked at Linux? And so I think it's changing. It definitely is.
Changing how?
Well, one of the things that has made it easier for people to actually switch to Linux when they do consider doing it is the fact that a lot of the Linux distributions these days have taken it on themselves.
Yep.
To make it much more easy for the novice user to install it, to begin to use it, and are using a lot more Windows-like terms for things so that it is more friendly to people switching from Windows.
Yeah, in other words, the different distributions now that are available are making it very Windows-like. The graphical user interface, the whole package, it's kind of all together. You're not thrown into a command line situation anymore. You don't have to really tweak and do things. Most of the under the hood stuff has already been done for you with these newest distributions.
That's exactly right. And everything is menu driven or wizard driven, just like it is on the Mac, just like it is on Windows. And there are very few things that you actually have to have a command line for in Linux these days.
Mm. Really? Yeah. Well, I would think so. I understand that the command line mentality, but it all came from command line structure. Even Windows came from DOS. So that was all there. But although it was never there for the Mac. I mean, you can get into it. You have the terminal program. You can get to the command line, but that was the one thing. When the Mac came out, it was always graphical user interface. It was never really it didn't have its roots, I guess, based on the command line from the very, very first Mac in 1984. But I guess that's really the model of success, the success model for the operating system in the home is something with an excellent graphical user interface, correct?
That's exactly right, yes.
Yeah, and so the Linux people have finally got that, huh?
Yeah, and it hasn't, you say finally got it as though it were something that's happened within the last couple of years. Mm. I think, it's been happening over the past 10 years or so, and it has become much, much more user-friendly in the past 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 years, to the point where you don't need the command line if you're just an average computer user who might pick up a computer with Windows on it and use it to browse the internet and check your email and do some things online, your banking and so on. You can do all of that on Linux or almost any other operating system for that matter without ever having to touch a command line. So it's not as scary as it used to be, and although it hasn't been really scary from a command line perspective for quite a few years, a lot of the little quirks and annoyances have been taken out of Linux to the point where it's actually easy to use, and you really don't have too much of a bad experience in most cases.
Kerry, are a lot of your or some of your users installed, you know, people that you help, do they have Linux or are they all Windows people?
Everybody that I, in my line of business, is all Windows repair, so
yeah,
I wouldn't have any reason to see Linux or to work on Linux.
So someone came in with you with a system and it wasn't working, and then the moment you saw it was running Linux, basically you would say, sorry, can't help you?
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
I would advise them to see. I mean, look, someone came in with a lawnmower and I'm there working on car. Well, that's not a fair example.
No, it's
that's
not
a fair example.
Yeah.
If someone came in with a hybrid and I was an auto mechanic, I would say, I don't know how to work on these hybrids. You'd be better off taking them somewhere where they know how to work on these electric motors and have the equipment necessary to do that and the experience.
Yeah, I think that's a little fairer comparison than a lawnmower.
I thought about it as I started saying it, and I backed up.
He did. He corrected himself,
that's
Larry.
That's the problem with live radio. You know, if we pre-recorded that, I could have made that right the first time.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's the bottom line, is knowing what my skills are, you know, knowing where my limits are. And right now, my attention and focus is on the Windows platform because that's the one that demands the most attention and requires the most, you know, when people call me with questions, I would say 999 calls out of 1,000, they're running some form of Windows. It's very rare that somebody calls me with either Linux or Apple product.
Well, Larry, then maybe does that add on to the answer for the first question that I asked you then? One of the reasons that Linux has still not penetrated the home or user market with any significance could it also be that when someone has a Linux machine and they call up, you know, the local computer guy to help them fix it at the store, and they go, sure, bring it in, and say, well, by the way, I'm using Linux, and then there's this cricket on the other end of the phone because that person is going to be able to help them. The support model isn't as well in place as it is with Windows or with an Apple computer. Do you think that also might be one of the reasons why Linux has still not penetrated the home or user market?
Definitely. It hasn't contributed to its, widespread adoption, that's for sure. However, although the Windows support model is walk into your big box store and ask somebody behind the counter, what's wrong with my computer? You know, you take it back to wherever you bought it, and they have some sort of technical folks there.
Yeah.
If it's an Apple, you might have the Genius Bar.
Right.
But those folks aren't necessarily the best trained folks in the world, and certainly most of them don't know anything about Linux. And so as a Linux user, you need to think a little bit differently as to how to get support. Certainly with Dell distributing computers with Linux pre-installed on them, System 76, and some of the other manufacturers or distributors of computers now putting Linux on there because they realize it is becoming more popular, those manufacturers and distributors of computers can give you some support, some telephone support and those kinds of things. But certainly the forums and other non-traditional support mechanisms are best.
All right. Well, there you go. Listen, we're going to break and we'll continue on with Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. 866-606-TALK is a toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We'll be back with them right after this.
Computer America. America is the longest-running national radio show on computers. Check it out at ComputerAmerica.com. Computer America airs every weeknight from 10 to midnight Eastern Time on the Business Talk Radio Network.
26 minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. If you want to join in on the information and the banter, if you will, about Linux for both hours, you can call us at toll-free 866-606-8255. That's 866-606-TALK. Or you can send us an email to live, that's L-I-V-E, at ComputerAmerica.com. Or join us in our chat room from the Computer America homepage. You'll see it says chat with us over on the left-hand side there. And just pick a screen name. That's the name you'll be known by when you enter into the chat room. Click the join button, and your Java-enabled browser, be on a Macintosh, Windows, Linux, yes, even Vista, it all works. We'll move you into the chat room where our guest for both hours tonight is participating as well. His avatar is green. That signifies him as being the guest. Larry Bushy is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And we're kind of focusing on why, you know, Linux really hasn't penetrated the home user market with any major significance. And we're coming up with a whole bunch of reasons as to why. Support being the one that we're kind of focusing in on because, you know, if you have a bad Mac or certainly a bad Windows machine, something's going wrong, there are places you can take it to help get support and service. And whereas with Linux, it's not quite as readily available. If you buy it from Dell, I would assume, Larry, that if you buy a machine and with the Linux installed on it, there's a number to call over at Dell for some technical assistance. And I wonder, how good is the quality of that support?
Well, I can only go by hearsay because I don't own a Dell computer, but uh-huh. What I've heard is that it's pretty good. Dell was under some fire a little while ago for having some offshore support that was a little subpar, and that has turned around, and I think that has turned around for Windows support as well, but certainly for the Linux support, you've got some very good folks on the other end of the line there, from what I hear.
Well, you know, but the thing is, if you got a Mac or especially if you have a Windows machine, chances are, if you need some problems, you know, you have a friend or an acquaintance or somebody in your office that's going to be able to give you some help or say, oh yeah, well it's this or that. I can see Carrie cringing in the corner right now. But the point is, you might know somebody who could help you out. But you know, with Linux, you're going to go looking for a little bit to find somebody who's got that at this point.
Yeah, you do. And the music for the break kind of snuck up on me there. I was in the middle of mentioning something about looking for support in a little unusual places for Windows users to think about looking. And that would be Google. Simply Googling whatever the error messages that you get and looking for information on the Internet. You can oftentimes get into computer forums, Linux forums, and it doesn't even have to be for the distribution that you're using. If you're using Ubuntu and you end up on a Debian forum or vice versa, or you end up on an OpenSUSE forum, you'll likely find something there that will help you out. And certainly the popularity of podcasts like mine at Going Linux, as well as some of the other ones that are out there, are beginning to provide an outlet for folks to email in, phone in, and sometimes even send voice messages for us to answer their questions and to help them out. And that's just not something that Windows users typically think about doing, but it's all there. It's all out there for support, and it works pretty well.
Well, you throw up another hurdle, though, when you say this, and it's an excellent one to bring attention to, is when I have Windows, well, you have Windows XP or you have Vista, okay? Those are the two real ones. So you're going to get help from one or the other. Mac, well, it's pretty much OS X these days.
Yeah.
But with Linux, as you say, there are different distributions, and there are quite a number of them. So that makes the small pool of help that you have under the label of Linux, you're further fragmenting that area of available help by all the available distributions. You not only have to find someone who knows Linux, now you have to find someone who's also familiar with that particular distribution of Linux. I'll tell you what, we got a break here, and I want you to address that when we come back. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's all Linux. tonight. Stay with us. Thirty-four minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com with the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Carrie and I are talking to Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And just before the break, I posed a question to Larry. Originally, I said that it's kind of hard to find technical support for using Linux, and my point to Larry, after he mentioned the different distributions available and the support for the different distributions, I said, are you not further fragmenting the help pool, if you will, by now you not only have to find someone who can help you with Linux, but that they have to know the particular distribution of Linux which you're using, and those are quite numerous. So I wanted to get your reply on that, Larry.
Yeah, it's not as bad as you might think. Certainly, okay, there are a lot of different distributions out there, but Linux is Linux is Linux. And much like Windows is Windows is Windows, you're using Windows 95, Windows 98, Windows NT, Windows whatever. Mm-hmm. You go to Microsoft.com to look for support if you're going on the Internet. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about Linux, though, is you can get a number of different opinions from a number of different places, a lot more places than just Microsoft.com. And so if you are looking for support on your Ubuntu installation, you can go to any of the Linux sites, whether it's your distribution or not, mm-hmm. and more than likely, the issue is an issue for everybody using Linux. And quite frankly, there's more of an issue with, is it a KDE problem or a GNOME problem versus is it a Linux a problem with Linux that's related to the distribution. And just for the listeners who are not so familiar with Linux, KDE is one of the desktop environments, and GNOME is another one. Those two are probably the two most popular, certainly two of the most widespread. Windows, of course, only has one desktop environment. That's the Windows desktop environment, mm-hmm. so there's nothing really to compare it to there. So it's just a different theme, if you will.
You can have different themes in the Windows environment. You can configure it differently. Even the Mac, you can make things look different appearances. But I think the KDE and GNOME go far beyond just the cosmetic. I mean, there are operational differences in how you make the desktop work, are there not, between the two?
There are indeed, and that's why I'm saying that it's difficult to make that comparison. I'm trying to put it into some terms that relevant to a Windows-only user in the past.
Let's jump back to Dell then. Now, what sure. distribution does Dell supply with their computers?
They are supplying Ubuntu at
okay.
this time.
So is it safe to say that if I buy a Dell and I'm using it, that I can only get support for the Ubuntu distribution? If I buy a Dell and I say, I want to try one of the other distros, you put that on there and you call Dell and say, hey, help, they're going to say, sorry, we can only help you with Ubuntu?
As a non-Dell user, or as not being a Dell user, I can't really speak for them.
Yeah.
I would expect that Linux being Linux, that they would probably do their best to help you out. I think they would have some right, if you would, to say, we're supporting only Ubuntu because that's the one that we support and that's the one that we develop on. But as I said earlier, a lot of the issues with Linux are common regardless of
okay.
the distribution that you're using.
Well, let me give you the flip side of the coin then. So what you're saying is that no matter which distribution I'm going to use, chances are it's not as, the distribution doesn't segregate you from the knowledge pool of Linux under the umbrella of Linux. I'm still going to be able to get help. If I go to someone I'm using, one distribution and they're using another, they're going to say, I haven't used that, but, why don't you try this or do that? They're still going to be able to help me?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's a whole different mindset that you have to get into when you're using Linux because it's really based on community, and maybe after the break I can touch on that a little bit further.
All right, good enough. All right. Well, I'm going to break for 60 seconds, Larry, and then we'll be right back. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number. Live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. It's all Linux for both hours of tonight's Computer America Show. Stay with us.
Talk Radio Network's talking with Larry Bushy. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast, talking all about Linux this entire show, as we do on the third Tuesday of the month, every month. If you have a question about Linux, it's certainly the night to call. 866-606-TALK is our toll-free number, and you can email us at live, L-I-V-E, at ComputerAmerica.com, and you're also welcome to join us in our chat room, which is happening right now during the show at ComputerAmerica.com. And before the break, Larry, you were telling us a bit about the Linux community and that unlike Windows, which is sort of every man for himself, Linux is a bit different. The Linux community is a bit different.
Yeah, it's a lot different. And as I started to say, it takes a little different mindset. You need to adjust how you think when you use Linux. And not just to use it, rather, it's to get support and other things about it, even to install software, you think about it in a little different way. But getting back to the support issue, Linux is not proprietary software. It is not something that's filled with copyrights and filled with trademarks and filled with things that companies have a vested interest in holding close to the vest. It is open source software, and as such, that means that everything about it, including how it works, is shared with its developer community and even with its user community. So if you wanted to be a developer and you are a simple user today, you can become a developer simply through studying the source code and getting help from the community. But for support with your Linux woes and Linux troubles, there is nothing holding someone from Novell, who's in charge of the SUSE distribution, helping someone helping someone using another distribution like PC Linux OS or something like that. It is really a community effort. Everyone who is a Linux developer and a Linux supporter has that community ethic. And it's really an open environment where people are willing to help one another, regardless of which distribution they're using. For example, I just purchased a brand new HP Pavilion, and of course it had Windows Vista on it, and I installed the latest Ubuntu on there. Now, this particular model of HP Pavilion laptop came with a Broadcom wireless card. Broadcom is one of those companies that does not share its source code. It is a truly proprietary company, and so it doesn't really support, or hasn't been really supporting until recently, the Linux community. And so it's difficult in many cases to get a Broadcom a wireless work card working on a laptop when you're using Linux. I searched the forums for Ubuntu and other distributions and found very little help because it's a relatively new model. Where I ended up with help was not on the HP site. It was not on the Ubuntu site. It was on the Dell site. And I was able to download a Dell driver, which I installed on my HP machine to make the Broadcom wireless card work under Ubuntu. And that's the kind of cross-company or cross-business support that goes on in the Linux community.
Now, there are small communities, I would imagine, for every operating system with people helping one another out.
Sure.
But it does seem that it in general, and we get back to the support issues. Craig, when you were asking me earlier about somebody brings a Linux computer in for repair, I think most people who run Linux fix it themselves or go about researching the problem to fix it themselves. I don't think it's an operating system that people call for help with, generally speaking.
Yeah. I agree, or they go to the person that recommended that they try Linux. And typically, that's a Linux geek, and they become the support person.
Interesting, because...
Well, when you're buying a computer and you're buying Windows, you're sort of... And you're buying this and you're buying that, it's natural to buy the support. But when you're getting the operating system for free and you're getting the applications for free and you're having problems, I think there's a frame of mind that follows that the support would be free as well.
Yeah, and all the community support is free, that's for sure. But you can also purchase support for a Linux distribution, for many of the Linux distributions, from the developer. For example, Ubuntu, which is the one I use, you can purchase support for that from Canonical, the company that puts it together.
Yeah, I know that for some businesses, they need to have a finger to point when things go wrong.
Right.
And that was a big deal with Red Hat, that they would be able to pay for the operating system and have support, and then when things didn't work, they could... you know, point the blame and get some help.
They would have a throat to choke, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're talking about home users, I think most home users that would go through the trouble of finding and researching which version or revision or distribution of Linux they wanted to install and then went through the process of installing it, for the most part, is not the same personality as somebody who... your average Windows user who really doesn't know very much about computers and is more quick to pick up the phone and say, you know, come over here and fix this for me and I'll write you a check.
I think there's two different mentalities
there, I think.
You're absolutely right. But think back when Windows 3.1 was the latest version of Windows. We were in kind of the same environment where only the techie people understood Windows and could help someone in an office, for example, understand what is this mouse all about and how do you move it around the screen, and I'm used to working with a WYSIWYG environment in my WordPerfect. What is this Microsoft Word stuff all about? It works differently. You know, an operating system really takes a while, especially in its formative years, and I would say that Linux is still in its formative years, to develop that user base. It's almost a catch-22. You know, in order to be popular, an operating system has to have a large number of users, but to have a large number of users, it has to be relatively popular. So I think now that we've had something disturb that balance, and that is Windows Vista, that's caused people to look outside of their Windows boxes, I think we're beginning to build up some momentum and build up a number of additional users and additional support people, and eventually, you know, it'll get to the point where one day we'll be saying, you know, where can't you get support for Linux?
You know, well, one day you might be referring to those days when we used to use Windows, like the days when we used to use DOS that we say today.
Yes.
And kind of chuckle at, oh yeah, those days, those very limited days, and how we got by, I don't know. Right now, I'm actually remotely into a client's laptop, and I've been logged into it since yesterday, trying to remove a particularly nasty piece of spyware. Now, I would love for that for my area of expertise of removing spyware, for that to be completely obsolete so that I could focus my mind on other things. But clearly with Linux, this is a non-issue.
Certainly it's a non-issue today. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a non-issue forever. One of the reasons why spyware and viruses are less prevalent or non-existent in the Linux environment has to do with the fact that virus writers and spyware authors are not writing it for Linux because they limit their distribution by doing that. They really have to go after the Windows folks if they want the widest distribution for their virus.
Yeah, but I think because of the open source nature of Linux, I think it would be much easier to remove these infections rather than what we're doing with Windows, which is a lot of, I don't know why that works, but that's how you do it kind of solutions. Tell you what, we're going to take a break here. This is the Computer America Show talking all Linux tonight, 866-606-TALK. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Don't forget to head on over to the Computer America website where our CompUSA contest is in full swing. We're giving away a mouse, but not only an ordinary mouse. It is a MOGO mouse. That's a little credit card size mouse that pops into, out of the PCMCI slot in your, on your computer, opens up into a full mouse. It recharges while it's in your computer. But not only that, it's a Bluetooth MOGO mouse. And not only that, it's made out of gold and diamonds. That's right, gold and diamond. It's valued at $1,000. Two lucky people receive one of these mice. We're giving away two of them in the contest. The contest is over, finishes on the 30th of May. So now, you know, about 10 more days, Carrie, and it's done. So get over to ComputerAmerica.com. Click on the big banner there. It says win this $999 gold and diamond Bluetooth MOGO mouse. Register for your chance to win. You can be anywhere in the United States of America, all 50 states, and you have to be 18 or years of age or older. And that's the only requirement. So go ahead and make sure that you get a chance to win.
That's what we're asking you to help us out in. We're looking to have a minimum of 5,000 people in this contest. Mm. And if you help us to reach that goal, essentially if we reach that goal, we've got some potential second and third place prizes to give away.
Some nice stuff.
So you might be thinking you're reducing your chances of winning. Why would I want anybody else to? Why do I want to tell anybody else about this contest? You know, then the odds of my winning go down. Nope. Ah, but that's not so. Because if we hit that magic number by the end of this month, we're going to add, we can add a couple of 19-inch LCD digital TVs with built-in DVDs, DVD players.
Wow, this is not a box of software. This is
this is a 19-inch flat LCD digital TV. It's a digital. It's not HD, but it's digital, which means you know, you don't need to have one of those converter boxes come February 9th.
Yep.
When everything switches to digital, it's good to go.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not a giant TV. It's a 19-inch TV. It's a beautiful widescreen 19-inch TV.
Yeah.
And let's see. We've got how about a couple of Brother laser printers?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Nice. So some we've got
this other thing. We could even go in, let's see, second, third. We could even have fourth place prize. Tell you what. I'll even add fourth place prizes.
Wow.
These are a company called Hava, H-A-V-A. Makes an alternative to the Sling Box. If you're familiar with the Sling Box, that you can watch TV from another anywhere around the world, watch your TV rather.
Yep.
Well, I don't know how many fourth place prizes I've got. I don't know. We give away about half dozen
don't
of these
commit
things.
Yourself.
So, that's the thing. I'm giving you some ideas.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
So if we do this, I just don't want to say second and third place prizes, and then you go, yeah, whatever. You know, who knows what they are? I always feel like if people don't say what it is, then they're hiding something.
No.
I want our audience to be fully aware of what we're talking about here. Now, if we don't hit that magic number, well, you know, we'll have to try again some other time. But I really love to give this stuff away. You know, I love giving stuff away.
Absolutely.
And I love to reward our listeners for listening to the show. And hopefully we'll get some new listeners in the process and help us spread the word. Help us hit that magic number, and the odds of you winning something definitely go up in the process.
All right.
Everybody wins.
And also, speaking of contests, a big congratulations to this week's Buddy List winner. I can't pronounce his last name, Patrick Pailipwick. He wins the brand new Logitech Wave keyboard and also a copy of PC Tools Internet Security Suite. That's a PC Tools all-in-one security suite featuring their award-winning anti-spyware, antivirus, firewall, and spam protection. And also, when we receive a call, email, feedback, or chat room visit for someone who's outside of North America, that person wins a copy of PC Tools' latest version of Spyware Doctor version 5.5. And we have a winner. Brian Goddard in Crouch Hill, London, is this week's international winner. Congratulations to all of you. We're going to be back with another full hour of Linux with Larry Bushy, the creator of Going Linux Podcast. Stay with us.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Your talk show on computers to air every weeknight, Computer America, hosted by national columnist Craig Crossman. The first hour's behind us, but there's still more of tech news, tech talk, and your phone calls. We're being beamed nationwide by the Business Talk Radio Network, the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and on the internet at ComputerAmerica.com. You got computer problems? Bring them on. You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world. And we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
I'm your co-host, Kerry Holzman.
And if you're just joining us, we're dedicating the entire 2 hours of this program to the topic of Linux as we continue on with our guest tonight. He is Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. And as I said in the first hour, if you have any interest at all in Linux, this is a wonderful opportunity to listen and learn and ask questions of our guest tonight. Toll-free, 866-606-TALK, the number. It'll get you on and get you through. That's 866-606-TALK, live@computeramerica.com, our special email address set up for when we're live and on the air, or join us in our chat room at the Computer America homepage where our Larry is participating as well. As a matter of fact, one of the questions that was asked in the chat room, Larry, from Eric, he says he wants to know, I guess he wants to get his toe wet with Linux, and he says, well, could I install Linux on another hard drive and, you know, have two hard drives on my computer? I'm assuming one would have Windows and the other one would have Linux on the other hard drive, and he could boot accordingly. Is that a good way to do that?
Yeah, you can do it that way, or you can, if you've got a large enough hard drive, and Eric said he has a 300-gigabyte hard drive in his computer, you can have the Linux installation on the same hard drive, just
partition?
On a different partition.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's a way that even running Linux without making any commitment at all to it, that you can run it off the some of the CD distributions will let you run Linux off of the CD, will it not?
Yeah, they call them live CDs because you boot from the CD and it goes through a rather lengthy startup process because it has to recognize your hardware and it has to do all of that from the CD and within RAM because it doesn't have a hard drive to work from. But if you be a little bit patient, it'll start up and you can use it just as though it were installed on your hard drive. It runs a little slower because it's running from the live CD, but you can do everything there that you can do on the real installation, including installing software, including getting on a wireless network, including trying out all of the applications that you might want to try out as well.
And it does all that without writing anything to the hard drive or modifying it in any way?
That's exactly right. In fact, if you want to access something on the hard drive that's in your computer, you can do that, but you've got to jump through some hoops to do it. So, in fact, many law enforcement agencies who have to do computer forensics and are looking at the contents of a hard drive will boot from a live CD, maybe Linux, maybe not, but they will make a copy of the hard drive using one of these things because they can guarantee that it hasn't changed the contents of the drive. And if they're looking for evidence for a court case or something like that, it's very important that they be able to demonstrate that nothing has been changed on that hard drive and that they work off of a copy.
Interesting. So basically, Eric, basically, you there are many, many different ways that you can run Linux. And if you really don't want to make the commitment to it, and you're worried about, you know, harming anything on your hard drives, not that you would anyway. But the point is, if you can certainly run it all strictly off the CD. Granted, it's going to be a little bit slower, but you certainly can do it that way too.
Yeah, it's no risk. And with today's computers, if you've got a relatively new computer that's been manufactured within the last couple of years, you may not even notice the performance hit by running off of the CD versus off of the hard drive.
All right, let me ask you this. One of the things that the Going Linux podcast does is help new people who are being introduced to Linux for the first time. If you had to answer the question, how would you answer the question? In other words, what is the most frequent question you get asked by your listeners?
Yeah, this is something that I think we mentioned the last time I was on the show, and that is, where are my desktop shortcuts or desktop icons? That's the most frequent question. Ubuntu is probably the most popular, well, arguably the most popular distribution of Linux out there. They've gotten a lot of good press, and they certainly put a lot of effort into supporting new users. And when you first install Ubuntu, there are no icons on the desktop. There's nothing there. It's a blank screen. You have wallpaper, but that's it. You have a start menu of sorts and some menus to choose from that get you into the operating system and the applications and so on, but there aren't any shortcuts on the desktop. So for someone moving from Windows, where's my documents icon is probably a very common question.
Well, aren't there some distros that actually make the desktop very Windows-like? So there's the documents, my documents folder, and my computer, and are there not? I know that they're out there. I mean, are they not?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So, yeah. And is that a smart thing to do? I mean, you're going to learn a new operating system, but it's going to make it look like Windows. So, does that really make a lot of sense?
Well, there are two schools of thought. One is you should make it look exactly like Windows, and it should perform all the tasks just like Windows does. In which case, why don't you just use Windows?
Yeah.
The other school of thought is, let's make it easy for the user, but let's not go out of our way to make it look too much like Windows, because it's not. It is something different, and we don't want to set up the expectation that everything will work exactly the way it did in Windows, because that's a false expectation. You do need to adjust your thinking a little bit, and although you have many of the same application types, like word processors and spreadsheets and text document editors and things like that, web browsers, on Linux as you do on Windows, they're not always the same. Certainly you have Firefox that's cross-platform between Linux and Windows and Mac, but you don't have Internet Explorer for very many things other than Windows.
Well, I guess that's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time, because let's face it, even Windows doesn't always work like Windows. That's one of the big things.
Yes.
That's one of the big things, bones to pick, that Kerry has against about Vista, because he's gotten comfortable. He knows where everything for XP is, and now they switch the pieces. They moved everything around. So
they move things around, and things have different names.
Yeah, Kerry, if you had to sum up the biggest frustration with Vista, would that not be it?
Well, sure. You're, it's an unnecessary learning curve that has no return advantage, other than it's going to work like XP did, except you have to figure out how to make it do that. It's very frustrating.
Okay.
When you're trying to get work done, especially if you have a number of employees and you have to retrain those employees, it gets very, very expensive very, very quickly, and work isn't getting done. And unless the return on that investment is going to be something that creates more productivity, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, now I know that in Vista you can make the user interface look like it did even back in Windows 98.
Well, yeah, but we're talking about changing what the start menu looks like. We're not talking about putting the control panel back the way it was,
Us
back the proper names and the locations of those items so that people can get back to work much quicker.
Well, and that's exactly why people make the leap to Mac or to Linux, is because they think to themselves, well, I have to learn something new anyway, and I've heard about all these other operating systems that have less problems with viruses and spyware. Let me try one of those, and let's just eliminate that whole issue.
Well, I think for most businesses, though, that's not the logic. It's not we have to move. We don't have to move, and Windows XP will be around through 2014 officially for support. But when we're talking about, we're talking about a home user, it's not as big of a problem as it is when we're talking about a business that's paying employees that needs to get work done. And if you have to train those employees, some employees are slow learners. There may be nobody there to train the employees. You have to go out and you have to hire somebody who then has to train the employees, and no work is getting done. And all you're doing as a business owner is spending more and more money. And yeah, if the end result of that is that now we're able to do something, we can accomplish more work than we were able to before, or do other kinds of work that we weren't able to do before, then that makes sense in the end of it. But the bottom line is you're right back where you were with XP as far as what you can do with the operating system, what the operating system will do for you. And in that situation, if you said, okay, we're going to completely get rid of Windows XP and we're forced into making a choice between Vista, Linux, and the Macintosh platform, then absolutely you're right. That's the case where people say, well, look, if I got to make the investment of learning anyway, why not give me something, you know, make my return on my investment greater by moving either to Linux or to the Mac platform?
Well, even some businesses are making some justification for moving to free and open source operating systems like Linux and BSD and others that involve looking at not only the initial outlay to cover the cost of training and continue the cost of support for Linux if they move to it, but they go beyond that and they look at what are the ongoing costs related to continuing to use Windows. Some of those ongoing costs are certainly support, which you also have with Linux, but you also have upgrade costs. When Microsoft brings out a new operating system, you know it's going to be obsolete at some point. And when they bring out a new Office suite, you know that they're going to be pushing very hard for you to upgrade, whether it's got features in the new version that you use or not. They're going to be pushing, and you're going to have to move all of your users to that version in order to maintain some consistency of support. So there are licensing costs, software licensing costs, retraining costs, and things with Windows that, yes, you have with Linux, but you're not paying for the operating system, and you're not paying for many of the applications, most of the applications. You can get free Office suites as easily as you can get free browsers. And as a result, some companies, not the biggest companies, but some companies are moving to Linux because of the ongoing cost, the total cost of ownership, to put it in business terms.
Let me ask you this, and again, I'm not sure of the answer to this one, though. I have my suspects. You mentioned that some distros have been made available, or at least one that makes it look very much like the Windows operating system, the desktop. Have there been any efforts to make Linux look more Mac-like?
Yes, and you know there aren't too many out there that actually go out of the way to do that out of the box. But there are a lot of tutorials online. There are a lot of distributions that give you enough tweaking features that you can make it look almost like a Mac.
Almost like a Mac. That sounds like a title for a good song. Speaking of which, I'm hearing music, and we have to take a break. But we'll be right back. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy, the creator of and host of the Going Linux podcast, joins us for the remainder of the show. Hopefully you will, too. Stay with us.
You're listening to Computer America, the official computer radio talk show of CompUSA.
That's us here on the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy is with us here. He's been with us for both hours. He's the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Again, this is a podcast for all walks of Linux life, if you will, from novice to expert, correct?
Or, as we say, users of Linux who just want to use Linux to get things done.
There you go. Well, let me ask you this. There are a lot of Linux distributions out there. We've named a lot of them. There are plenty more. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are free, and there are a lot of them that you pay for. So I guess my question is, in the world of Linux, does the adage, you know, you get what you pay for, hold true here as well? Or, you know, why buy something if they're all pretty much the same?
Yeah, the core of every Linux distribution is the same, and that is the Linux kernel. And so at its heart, they're all the same. What's different between them is the way they've implemented the support network around the Linux kernel, the way they run the printers, the way they support the video display or the modem or whatever it is. There's that. And also which applications it comes bundled with. OpenSUSE, for example, is one from Novell that is currently aiming to be very much like Windows in the way that it has icons on the desktop. It has one of its desktop environments is KDE, which has a K menu that's very similar to the Windows Start menu, and it's laid out very familiar to people who are moving from Windows. And PC Linux OS is another one that tends to package applications that make it look somewhat like Windows, to make it look familiar for people switching. So there are those kinds of distributions out there. And then there are others that have very esoteric applications that look very different and intend to look very different because they want to be they want to have that bad boy image, you know? And so,
okay,
they like being a geek.
Okay, all right. Well, is it safe to assume then if I buy a distribution from a company that sells these, that I'm going to be entitled to have some kind of source for technical support then? And that's a good reason to buy a distro?
I don't think you can make that assumption. You need to look at the terms and conditions of your purchase. Certainly, first of all, I think we need to explain that Linux is free and open source. Free, not necessarily meaning no charge, but meaning free as in speech. In other words, you can freely distribute it, you can freely copy it, you can freely give it away to other people, and you are also free to sell it at a charge if you so choose. So I could download a copy of Ubuntu from the Canonical website for free, no charge, and give it away, or I could charge for it. Now, I don't think it would be in my best interest to charge for it because I don't think I'd get very many repeat customers, because once they find out that I'm not offering any support for my $2.95 for this CD, and they could have gone and downloaded it themselves, they're going to be a little upset and probably turn people away from my website where I charge for it. And now, there are websites out there that will that will mail you CDs, and they have their place. Those folks who want to use Linux and have dial-up, for example, it may take them days to download a live DVD.
Ouch.
Yeah, so it's definitely worth their while to pay the mailing charge to have a CD sent out. And it's well within the terms of the GNU public license, which is what most of the Linux applications are or Linux distributions are developed under, to be able to sell Linux. So, but you have to be careful that you don't make the assumption that just because you purchased it, there is support that goes along with that.
But can you give examples of a high quality one where there is? I mean, that where you're entitled to some kind of technical support, and what is that technical support?
Yeah, I can't really give you an example of one.
Really?
The
big names like Red Hat or I mean, none of them give you technical support.
You can purchase versions with technical support, but you're paying for the technical support. You're not purchasing the operating system, typically. And you can do that with many of the operating systems that are out there.
When you buy Windows, Microsoft's not entitled to give you technical support. They don't.
Right.
Oh, yes, they are.
When was the last time you called Microsoft for tech support? Online, maybe.
If you buy a retail copy, it comes with support from Microsoft.
Yeah.
However, if you buy the OEM version and save $100, then you're not getting any support at all from them. That's sort of why they're justifying the savings, is that doesn't cost them anything at that point after the sale if you can't figure out what to do with it or you have any problems for the installation.
That's true. Yeah, I know. Well, that is true. All right, well, it's music time, which means, once again, we're going to take a little break. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com, our email address, or, of course, the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. We'll be right back. Stay with us. On the Computer America Show, 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or the chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. All this hour, for the entire show, we've been talking about Linux with Larry Bushy. He is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. I was going to ask you a question, but I think it was already answered in our chat room by Addison. I wanted to know, is there a place that you can go to see a complete up-to-date list of active Linux distros?
Yes, and I see that the answer that was given in the chat room is the one that I would have recommended, which is distrowatch.com. And DistroWatch is a website that takes an approach to ranking Ubuntu's at the top of the list. That's why it came to mind there. At ranking Linux distributions based on the number of downloads that users are clicking on to get a copy of that particular distribution. And the top three right now on DistroWatch are Ubuntu is number one, PC Linux OS is number two, and OpenSUSE is number three.
Mm-hmm. And who makes those decisions? Is this by the number of purchases that are made? Do they make this information public? Or what are they basing this on?
Yeah, I'm not absolutely clear as to how they do their ranking. My understanding, though, is that it's based on the number of downloads. Of course, people aren't purchasing Linux in this case. They're simply downloading it, and you can buy it. They have links on the website that allow you to purchase it. But they're looking at the downloads, I believe.
Okay. Well, is it a fair question to ask? I mean, I don't know necessarily if you can toss these numbers off the top of your head, but I mean, how many distros are there out there?
Oh, hundreds.
Hundreds?
Yes. And some of them are dedicated to one particular purpose.
Give me an example of that. How do you dedicate an operating to a whole operating system to one particular purpose?
Well, they're using the Linux operating system to accomplish that purpose. For example, on the DistroWatch site, you scroll down a little ways and you see things like Rescue CD. You see things like Clonezilla or Gparted. The Rescue CD is self-explanatory. It's a Linux bootable CD that has utilities on it that allow you to fix your computer, and typically it's used to fix Linux computers or Windows computers. I don't know whether it'll work on a Mac or not, but it's certainly I've used a Linux Rescue CD to fix my Windows computer. Clonezilla is a backup program that works equally well with Linux partitions and Windows partitions, and clones the drive, much like Norton Ghost does for Windows computers. And what was the other one I mentioned? Gparted. Gparted is a hard drive partitioning program. All of these are based on a Linux kernel and a Linux Live CD technology that allows you to boot from the CD and then use the utilities on the CD to do something, back up your computer, fix the computer, partition the hard drive, whatever. So that's an example of a dedicated Linux distribution.
Okay, we got a question here. I think it's from Las Vegas, and he says this is from Chuck in Las Vegas. He's listening to us on our affiliate KNews AM 970. He says, greetings from Las Vegas. He says, where can I find instructions on how to get into the Grub bootloader and how to arrange which OS boots first or as the default. And I'll tell you what, why don't we continue on with that right after as well, okay?
Okay.
We're going to break for 60 seconds, and then we'll be right back. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, live at ComputerAmerica.com or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. 60 seconds. We'll be right back. It's all about Linux this hour. Stay with us.
And we're back with the Computer America Show. We are live on the Business and Lifestyle Talk Radio Networks. And all this hour, we're talking with Larry Bushy of the Going Linux podcast. And we have an email from a listener in Las Vegas who is telling us that our station out there, KNews 970, is not airing us right now for some reason. We'll have to look into that. And if anybody's listening
because,
to that,
I'm looking at their
like
website.
To know what it's what they are airing. I'm kind of curious about that. That's news to us. That's KNews to us, actually. And his email was he wanted to know where he could find instructions on how to get into the Grub bootloader and how to arrange which OS boots first or as the default. Any advice for Chuck in Las Vegas?
Yes. The easiest way is go to www.google.com/Linux and enter in Edit Grub Bootloader. One of the links there, you'll find that because Ubuntu is one of the most popular distributions, you'll find a lot of links when you do things like that to the Ubuntu help site. It'll lead you to the help.ubuntu.com site, which is a secure site. And it takes you to /community/grub/how-to, all one word. And that is an article that leads you through about 13 or so different topics related to using the Grub bootloader, including how to modify and edit it. And that, I think, is probably one of the best tutorials that is out there for doing that sort of thing. And I noticed when I did the search, there are a number of other links, very good links to forum posts and things like that.
Well, we hope that helps Charles out there. And, of course, if he has any other further questions, are welcome to email that in to us. And, in fact, while we only do the Linux show once a month, you're always welcome to email your questions at any point. And, of course, we'll put those in our list of our to-do list, if you will, for when our Linux show is on. Now, I was just curious if you had any questions handy, perhaps that maybe listeners have sent to you that you might want to share with us tonight.
Sure. One of the ones that has this is one that's been around for a little while, quite frankly, but it was sent in to us by Henry, and Henry says, I did some Google searching on how to enable the mouse browsing buttons that I found, and I found a lot of old stuff. What he's talking about here is he is looking to he's got a what's it called? Logitech mouse, and I know you've given away some Logitech mouse.
Yeah, we do. Yes,
just
we do.
Just a few.
And a lot of Logitech mice have a number of different auxiliary buttons, not just the left and the right mouse button, but things on the side and something on the scroll wheel. Under Linux, it may not recognize it right from when you first install the mouse on the USB port. So I found for him is, after doing some Google searching for mouse, I found a lot of old posts, and I didn't find anything relatively new. And then I got to thinking, since this guy's using Ubuntu, he told me in his email that he's using Ubuntu, let me check on my Ubuntu machine in the package repository to see if there's something already there. And again, some definitions for the Linux newbies. Packages are software packages in Linux terminology, and a repository is kind of a candy store or a software library of all of the applications that are vetted, if you will, for that particular distribution. So there is a package manager that you can go into, and you can search through there for anything that's available for installation for free on your computer. And so I went in there, and I searched for the term mouse. And I found something called LoMoCo, which is a logic mouse control for USB mice. And according to the description, it can configure vendor-specific options on Logitech USB mice or dual personality mice. I'm not sure what that is, but plugged into the USB port. A number of recent devices are supported. The program is most useful in setting the resolution to 800 CPI or higher on mice that boot to 400 CPI.
Larry, we got a caller who has a question for me. We're going to take him. His name is Mark. He's listening to us in Ringwood, New Jersey. Computer America, Craig Crossman. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, welcome to the show. What's your question for Larry?
My question is, I was thinking about taking a 2-year course for Microsoft certification, and I was wondering if there's a course or program for Linux certification.
Well, Mark, yes, there are. Now, I am not an expert in the certification programs for Linux, but I do know there are Linux certification programs out there. I think some of them are offered by Red Hat. Some of them are offered by even local community colleges may have something in the way of a certification program. But I haven't been involved in them myself, so I don't have a specific one to recommend. But they definitely are out there, and many of them are certifying you from everything from the desktop right through to the server.
Well, there's a program for you. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Well, so Mark, you get your question answered for you here. Do we get your question answered, Mark?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Well, listen. Thanks so much. By the way, did you enter in the contest that we have at Computer America?
Well, actually, I just discovered you guys tonight.
Ah. Okay.
No, I don't know about the contest.
Well, go ahead. Go to computeramerica.com, and we're giving away diamond and gold mice for your computer. Literally, the real stuff. They're valued at $1,000 each. So just go ahead and check it out at computeramerica.com. Okay?
Okay.
All righty. Thanks for calling the show.
Hey, and thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
The tip I gave earlier about the Logitech mice, if he installs Linux on his computer, he will be able to get it running.
There you go. That's right. Exactly.
Well, it's not a Logitech mouse.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Perhaps that same tip still will help.
Yes, it will, because it's a MoCo mouse, actually. But yeah, there you go. All right.
What a perfect place for a gold and diamond mouse, by the way. Las Vegas. That would fit right in. Wouldn't even stand out. No one would look at it twice.
It would. Except
that Mark was in Ringwood, New Jersey. He was calling us from. So, but I'm sure.
Oh, I still have Las Vegas on the
mind. Yeah, he's in Ringwood, New Jersey. But I'm sure that the diamond and gold mouse certainly would look nice no matter where you are, New Jersey or otherwise. 866-606-TALK, the toll-free number, 866-606-8255. I'll get John to get you through live at ComputerAmerica.com or our chat room at ComputerAmerica.com. Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. How many Linux podcasts out there are? What makes you kind of – and that there are a number of them, what makes you stand out? Other than the fact they have you, Larry.
Yes, I am very unique.
There
That's
you go.
Uh-huh. Yes. Well, There are a couple of things that make us unique at Going Linux, and my co-host Tom and I are not exactly on different coasts, but we've never met one another. Tom's in Wisconsin, I'm in California, and
sounds like a little familiar overtones going on here. Okay.
Yes, very similar. And Tom is even more of a Linux newbie than I am. I am certainly no expert, but I've been using Linux for a good bit longer than he has. And we feed off of one another, and he keeps me honest on making sure that I don't talk too techie. And I keep him honest in that I egg him on to get some additional Linux things going on. One of the key things, though, that makes us unique is that there are a number of Linux podcasts out there. Some of them are very techie, very geeky, and they get into the nuts and bolts of how Linux works, and they talk about command line stuff all the time, which is a little intimidating to someone who is moving from a Mac or moving from Windows and isn't all that technical. And then there are other Linux podcasts out there that tend to be evangelistic podcasts that are always evangelizing Linux and making it out to be the be-all and the end-all, bad-mouthing Windows, bad-mouthing Mac, and those two operating systems are good operating systems, and each of us, Linux, Mac, and Windows, has advantages and disadvantages. And that's the approach that Tom and I take in our podcast. We try to make it for someone switching from Windows, someone switching from the Mac, so we don't get too technical, and we don't get too evangelical about Linux. And we do our fair share of bashing. Let's face it, Microsoft makes it easy. But we try not to do that any more than we absolutely have to in order to make a point. But we want to be approachable for the average listener and the average computer user. And so we keep it simple. We keep it we keep it honest.
Well, there you go. It's obviously a nice winning formula for you. It's always nice to have something that works. And I'll tell you what, speaking of something that works, we're going to listen to a commercial or two, because they do work. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. Talking to Larry Bushy, the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned for more of Computer America. Welcome back to the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network and the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network. All this hour, we have been talking to Larry Bushy, who is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, if they want to find your podcast, subscribe to it, where do they go? How do they do it?
Well, you can go to goinglinux.com. That's our website. And you'll find links on there that allow you to listen right there on the website. You can download each individual episode as MP3 or OGG files. OGG is the open source audio file format. You can also put it into a podcatcher or podcatching software like iTunes. You can find us on iTunes as well. Even though iTunes doesn't work on Linux, we do realize that many of our audience members are using Windows, so, or Mac. So we make our podcast available on iTunes as well.
Okay. We got another caller. I don't know if we're going to have – well, I don't think we have – Carrie, do we have time taking the call here?
Let's try it.
Okay. Dan from Western Illinois has a question. Computer America. Hey, Dan, we got about a minute left.
Hello. Thank you for taking my question. I'm running Ubuntu 8.04.
Mm-hmm.
And I like VLC as a media player, both on Windows and Linux.
Yep.
But how do I make it default? I keep going to preferences, and it, you know, it's got Totem there and all that, and I type in VLC in the command line, and it doesn't save it that way.
Yes. Well, Ubuntu does. You said Ubuntu is your distribution, right?
That's what I'm using currently. Yeah.
Yes. Ubuntu has a preferred applications menu selection. If you go to System, Preferences, and then Preferred Applications, you'll get a list, a tabbed list that includes a multimedia tab where you should be able to indicate what your default media player is.
That's the one that comes up, though. I think default was either Totem or Movie Player or Rhythm Box, one of those. And it's also got a box you can enter for VLC.
Right. You need to select
and
custom.
VLC and on the custom.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hold. I mean, it doesn't. I type VLC in, and it doesn't stick.
Okay. One of the little quirks of Linux. Yeah, this is real life. I think we'd have to do a little bit of research to find out why it's not sticking. It could have something to do with your hardware. It could have something to do with the particular configuration file.
The hardware is older hardware. It's a gigahertz Athlon.
Mm-hmm.
But it does run the current version, whereas I wouldn't dare try Vista on that.
Right. One of the nice things about Linux is that all of the configuration files are text files. So
guys, we're just about out of time here. I'm sorry,
okay.
Dan. I'm sorry you waited to the last minute, but you know that's what happens when you call the show. So thank you so much for calling, but we're just flat out of time.
Thank you for taking my
hey,
call.
Hey, Dan. Listen, Larry. Thanks so much for being here on the program. The Going Linux podcast, the name of the show. We'll have a link to it in our show notes. Larry, thanks very much for being here with us tonight.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Have a good evening. Good night now. And, yeah, we are flat out of time. Carrie, what do we got coming up on tomorrow night's program?
Tomorrow night is Wednesday Madness.
Oh, yes. Good old Wednesday Madness. And that means anything goes. And what the heck it usually does here on the show. Open phone lines on any topic that you want to talk about, not just the topic we're talking about for that particular hour. So that's all coming up. Don't forget, again, to sign up for the CompUSA Golden Diamond Mouse Contest. You still have time to get in on the bling action. So until tomorrow night, this is Craig Crossman hoping that your hard disk never becomes floppy. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Good night, everyone.
The opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.